Mr. David Walker, Reel 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Walker?
Yeah, I was born on the 27th of September 1920 in a place called Lockerbriggs in Scotland. It's near Dumfries in the south of Scotland. And I went to...
Can you tell us a bit about your family background?
Your
parents and what sort of...
Yeah, my father had his own business as a motor engineer and repairer. And my mother was there as well, and I spent a long time with my grandmother, looking after her. She had been left a widow of 8 children when she was very young. And at this time, she was going blind, and I was sort of dispatched to sort of give her a hand, like.
She was in Lockerbie as well,
Lockerbriggs.
Lockerbriggs, sorry.
And then until she had what must have been at that time one of the first cataract operations, when she regained her sight, which was wonderful. Anyhow, I went to Dumfries High School when I was 12.
How did you do at school?
Average. Not brilliant. Nothing brilliant. And, of course, in those days... You left school at 14.
Now, did you have any particular favourite subjects or anything you particularly liked doing, sport or...?
Well, I liked sport, and I liked playing football, and I liked history and geography and subjects like that. I was very interested in them. Mathematics I wasn't keen on, and although I did them, but that was it. So I left Dumfries High School at 14, which is 1934, in the middle of the Depression. Everybody had to find a job. So I was lucky to find a job just as an ordinary messenger boy.
Who for?
For a firm of wholesale stationers, which wasn't brilliant. Then, through being with these firm of wholesale stationers, I used to call in this printers with the paper and stuff. And through them, I was offered an apprenticeship in the printing trade.
Well, what exactly as? Because there's quite a lot of things in...
Compositor. And...
Could you explain, because we're quite interested in this sort of thing, what the job of compositor was in those? Because it's all gone now.
Yeah, that's right. A compositor, in those days, was when we had lead type. And a compositor's job, a hand compositor, set the type up and displayed it, whichever it was going to be.
How did you actually do it?
Well, you had what we call a setting stick. And you picked the type individually out of the case, lower case and upper case, and set it up upside down in your setting stick from left to right. The stick being made up with whatever measure you wanted the lines to be. And you had different sizes of type, to your big type, your display type, and you could display all different things. So that was a 7-year apprenticeship.
Well, so it doesn't sound, it doesn't sound from what you say, there was much to learn. What exactly were you learning that took 7 years?
There was a lot to learn, 7 years. I mean, this hand setting was nothing. I mean, there was impositions, the way you lay the type different pages out so as when it's all folded up and cut, it all falls in the right order. And there's colour technology. Huge amount of things.
So it was more than just laying out time.
It was a 7-year apprenticeship.
And you started that about
35. But I didn't finish my apprenticeship because, as you know, the war started in 1939. And I volunteered in November 1939 for the Royal Navy.
Now, before we go into that, had you had any sign in yourself that the war was coming? Were you aware of trouble in Germany?
Yeah, I was, without a doubt. Because, I mean, even the year before, from 1937... through 1938, we all followed what was happening in Europe and Poland and Czechoslovakia and all the rest of it. So we knew it was more or less inevitable.
Did you understand what was going on in Germany, or did you, you know, I mean, properly? Or was it
only
just
a 16-year-old's interest, you know, but basically he knew what was happening. But and then, of course, we always had the First World War in mind. That wasn't very far gone. Although we didn't remember it, not being born then, it was only, we were talking about 20 years before.
Had your dad served in the
war? No, he was in reserved occupation in a big factory, what was the Arl Johnson, called the Arl Johnson. And he was in a reserved occupation being, well, I suppose, in war work, I suppose.
Now, what do you remember of the actual outbreak of war? You know, the day war broke out is the
well, I remember Chamberlain's speech.
You actually heard it?
I heard it on the radio on that Sunday morning.
What impact did it make on you?
Well, initially, not a great deal, I'm afraid, but we were up there, we were a bit far out of it. You know, up in Scotland, you wonder, if you'd been in London, you'd probably have been more aware. But we gradually became aware because, I mean, talking at that factory where we had to pass every day, there were suddenly sentries outside. And every time you passed it, you were stopped. Halt, who goes there? And you had to stop and identify yourself. And that was only passing the main gate, which was on the main road. However,
now, what made you think of job? Because it was only 2 months into the war that you actually volunteered. What made you think of volunteering?
Well, I knew I would have to go sometime. And I thought, I'm not going in the army. And I'm not going in the Air Force.
Now, why not?
Because I just didn't fancy them.
But why not? Do you see what I mean? What was it put you off the army and the Air Force?
I'd done all the foot slogging, I think, in the army. You know, and being in the infantry or anything like that. I thought, it's not for me. And I always had a hankering for the Navy. Right, you know, since I was very young. I'd like to be in the Navy.
So where did you go to volunteer?
I volunteered in the local place, in Dumfries, and put my name down.
What was the sort of procedure? You know, was it a normal recruitment office or a special naval recruitment?
It was just it was a building. I think the whole three were there, Army, Navy and Air Force. And I went and was interviewed for the Navy. And they said, well, what would you like to go into? What branch would you like to go into? And I always fancied communications. So they said, all right. They took all the particulars, age, where you lived, address. Well, within a couple of weeks, I got to come for a medical, which I did do.
How strict was it, would you say? What kind of a medical was it?
Well, it wasn't very strict, to be honest. And I thought it would have been a bit stricter for the Navy. But it was quite strict. I mean, they didn't leave anything out. They went from head to toe, you know. This, that and the next thing. But anyhow, I passed. And early, I think it was about February in 1940... I got my call-up papers for about 10 days hence.
How did you feel when you got them?
Well, first of all, I hadn't finished my apprenticeship, so I had to make arrangements with the governor about that. But they were quite good about it. They knew what was happening and they didn't bother. So I reported to, as you said, Royal Arthur.
That's at Skegness, the old Butlins camp.
That's right.
That was in February 1940?
Yeah.
And
as far as I can remember, that is near as, you know, Damn it.
Now, what can you remember about... I mean, it was quite a journey. Had you been that far south before?
No. Now, for me, that was a big thing. Huge thing. I mean, you're young. Well, you're 19-year-old. And they see you off at the station about... I've got the train at 11 o'clock at night. Travel to Leeds. And I got to Leeds about 3 o'clock in the morning, I suppose. Then I had to wait in the station till about 9 o'clock to get another train for Boston. And then change at Boston and get a train up to Skegness. And of course, the time you arrived there, I think it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Now, you were arriving as a young lad, a civilian, and, you know, they sort of take you in a couple of days, you're in the Navy, you
that's
know.
Right,
what do you remember of that sort of reception procedure, or how did they do it?
Well, it we were lucky in as much as a whole class of us arrived more or less at the same time. And over the next few days, you were taken to be kitted up. You know, they slung a uniform at you and...
Do you remember what they gave you, the uniform and other kit?
Yeah, they gave you two suits and a pair of boots, I believe, a Macintosh and singlets and underwear, you know, everything, and a hat and... Yeah, that was in a kit bag and all the rest of it. And then you were all met together, and of course it was chalets there. You see, there was two to a chalet.
What were the chalets like? I mean, I know they're the old butler, you know, the butler.
Yeah, place. That's right.
But could you describe what they were like as used by the Navy? I mean, how did they strike you? How much room was there?
Oh, well, there wasn't much room. They were basic, austere. There was only a small sort of dressing table, and there was no... washing facilities in the chalet. You had to go to a shower block to wash. But one of them was, they were all in lines, you see, and there was shower blocks down the middle. So there was ample room, plenty of room. And you had a couple of single beds in the chalet, and that was it.
Just two to you to a chalet then?
Yeah, two to a chalet.
And what about heating? Because February, a bit cold still perhaps in 1940.
Yeah, there were no heating, basically. I mean, there were summer things, you know, there were no heating. But you had plenty of blankets. But it was really cold.
Now, how long were you at Royal Arthur?
I think I was in... signalmen, you know, visual signals.
Now, what I meant was, how long were you doing your basic training?
Yeah, there? Well, this is it. It was quite some time. I should think it was about 3 months.
So, let's look at a sort of typical day, and then we'll pick up all the bits of training and conditions. What time would you get up in the morning, roughly?
Six. Shower and wash and whatever, shave, breakfast.
Now, what about food? That brings us to... Generally, food throughout the day. What did you think of the food?
Very good, very good. From what I can remember it. And it was all huge dining halls. And there was, I think there was about four of them for the whole camp. Mine was Kent. And it was a lovely dining hall, and the kitchens were... And the food came up, and you were all at big, long tables. And the food was very, very good, and plenty of it.
So, as good as you got at home?
That's right. You'd three meals a day. You'd breakfast, lunch.
What sort of stuff would you get?
Well, porridge, or a boiled egg, or a fried egg in Russia, and toast or bread, whatever, and tea, big mugs of tea. And lunch, I forget what we had for lunch, but it was used soup, potatoes, roast, and whatever. And then in the evening, about 7 o'clock evening meal. And there was always, you could always buy Horlicks or whatever, cocoa or coffee or whatever. There was plenty of tea bars.
I'll come back. So that was the food. Now, what about training? If we start with sort of basic drill, How did you take to foot drill?
well, it wasn't too bad, actually. I think my class was, there was about 20 of us in a class. And we started off marching with the chief yeoman and marching you up and down and gaiters on, you know, for the... And he teach you the basics, the way to march and swing your arms and the way to salute and all the basic things of Navy training.
Was there a lot of drill?
Not drill like this. Ours was more learning. You had to learn Morse code.
I'll come on to that. But so drill was not really just quite a basic course in drill. Not a lot more than that. What about other things that everybody would do, not just a signal? You know, would you have any sort of weapons drill with learning to with rifles and such like that?
Very little, because it had nothing to do with us really. Rifles, being communications, and it seemed to be all communications. It was there, visual signals.
No seamanship then.
WT. There was a little seamanship, as far as I remember, but not too much.
What do you remember of that? I'm going to come on to signals, don't worry. What about
the only part of seamanship that we were taught was climbing a rope ladder to get onto what they call the boom, to get onto a ship, if you're going that way. And knots. We were taught knots. And what other thing, basically?
So not much.
Not much as regards weapons training. Actual seamanship or weapons training.
Well, what about signal training then? How did this start?
This was very intense. First of all, we had a lot of classroom work. You were taught Morse. You were showed what.
How did they teach you Morse code?
Well, they told you what it was like, you know. And the alphabet, and the first thing to do was learn that off pat, so that you had it right in your mind. Then they started with lights, the chief yeoman operating the light slowly, and you had to write down what it was. And then it gradually over the weeks got speeded up and speeded up. Then you were also taught there's various naval manoeuvres.
Did they teach you the buzzer as well?
No.
So just the lights?
Just the lights. WT was buzzer, you know.
Okay, sorry, I interrupted
That's
you.
That's all right, no problem.
Carry on. You were saying there were various manoeuvres.
Yeah, and there's also flags. You had to learn all the different flags. And each flag's got a meaning. You had to learn all that, what they meant. And also, in their various sequences, where you could do this, that, and the next thing, and what they meant. And, because there was Order 1, if you know, that is ships in line ahead. Then it's... Blue 4, that's all ships move together 40 degrees to starboard. And all different signals like that, which you had to learn. And there was a lot to take in, a really lot. And also, but what helped you with all these different manoeuvres, when the chief yeoman was taking us marching up and down, he positioned us all as a fleet. And when he gave the order... You did the appropriate manoeuvres. You either turned to starboard 90 degrees or 45 degrees or whatever, or turned to port the same. Or if it was red so-and-so, you all went round following one another round. So there's all these sorts of things. And gradually it came to you. And every day... You had an exercise, maybe twice a day, and it was in three parts. The first part was all single letters, transmitted outside, and you always worked in pairs. So the one reading would face, and the one writing down.
Now this is with flags. With flags or with flashing?
This is flashing.
Flashing.
And he would and you'd say A. But he said, and there was Abel, Baker, Charlie, Dog, so that you didn't, because we were all speaking with different accents. There was Scots, and there was Birmingham, and there was Londoners. And that clarified that. Then after you did the single letters, there was these different manoeuvres, which you had to write down and get right. And then after that was a long paragraph of what we call plain language.
And this is all by flashing?
All by flashing. So you did one, and then you turned round and the other chap had his turn, and you wrote down for him, like, you know. And you usually had that twice a day. Then, after that, you would go, as I say, learning all the flags, hoisting the flags, learning how to hoist them, and one would start from one end, and another would start from another end and meet in the middle, and learn how they all clip together. And you couldn't let a halyard go, otherwise you went up the mast and got it. So you had to do a proper routine for holding the halyard. And then it was classroom stuff with all the naval signal books, fleet signal book, and what we used to call the Yellow Peril, and all the different naval books.
What was the Yellow Peril?
That was, what was its proper name? I can't remember. But it was all the really intricate stuff of different types of signals, like.
But you had nothing to do with wireless or signal, you know, that sort of thing?
Mine was purely visual, absolutely visual. So I think the whole course was about, well, we were there quite a good time, about 6 months, I think.
6 months?
I believe so.
At Royal Arthur?
Yeah.
And
then when you were coming near the end of your course...
Hang on a minute, we'll just go, I'll come
all right, okay. Right.
So, yeah, so yeah. You've got all these sessions. Now, what did you think of your instructors and the way in which they taught you?
Very good. I thought, looking back, they were very good. At the time, I thought, there was, well, one of them, I thought he was a bit strict, you know, a bit hard.
What would he do that you thought was too much?
Well, it was just the way he spoke to you, you know, and he wasn't approachable or anything like that, you know, keep going, and he'd make you do it again and again and again, like, you know. But he was a perfectionist, and he was good.
And he was the exception rather than the rule?
Yeah, that's right. Of course, we had about three or four looking after us, instructing us.
And did you get the feeling they really knew the stuff?
Oh, they did. They did.
Were they basically old sailors, you know?
Yeah. I would think they'd retired, but they couldn't have been retired long. But, they did know their job.
And what about your fellow recruits? How did you get on with them? You said you were a mix, Scots, Brummies, Lunds, Cockneys.
Very good on the whole. Yeah, very good. I never remember any case where there was any difference of opinion or anything like that.
There was no bullying then?
No. And, of course, you all went your own way in your free time if you went ashore or anything like that into Skegness. But there wasn't a lot in Skegness to do. There was nothing you could do.
Okay. Would you stick together with fellow Scots, or would it be sort of across the range?
Yeah, no, just across the range.
So you wouldn't all stick together from Scotland?
No. It wasn't a sort of clannish thing or anything like that. So...
And what about the officers? Did you see much of them together, you know?
At that stage, no. No. You had an officer, a signals officer, but you didn't see a great deal of him.
Now, what about, I mean, you mentioned, what would you do in your rest time? I mean, if you got a rest time, I mean, in the evening, what time would you finish?
About 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
And then what would you finish? Do?
Well, you know, they have a wash and freshen up. As far you didn't bother going ashore, although you could have gone ashore then, but I didn't bother going in the evenings or anything like that.
Well, by ashore, you mean to
Skegness? Yeah. That's all you could go. If I did go, I'd go at the weekends on a Saturday.
And what would you do when you went to
Skegness? Well, there was not a lot you could do. I used to go dancing. That was all you could do. And get the coach back, you know, about 10 o'clock. But
did you drink at all then?
No, I didn't.
Were you actually teetotal or just not drink very much?
Well, I just didn't drink, you know, that was it. And although I did drink now and again, but I couldn't go for a drink and stand in a pub or anything like that. That was my scene.
And was there any trouble with the local lads at the dances?
No, there was none.
And when you were back in camp, what was there for you to do in Royal Arthur, in the camp?
What was what?
For you to do in the camp?
Let me see. Oh, there was various entertainments. And you used to have any entertainment among the sort of sailors, like there was pianists or singers or anything like that, variety concerts or anything like that. They were quite good. And actually I met a mate from my hometown that was in Royal Arthur at the same time. And he was in WT, and he went on to be in submarines. And I used to call and see him a lot, you know, and have a chat with him. And
what about the NAFI, the canteen, if it was? Would you go there much?
Yeah, he used to go there and sit and have a chat, you know, and mugs of tea or whatever, you know, and smoke. I smoked in those days, but...
Now, what about preparing for kit inspections and room inspections? I presume, you know, you'd have to do that occasionally.
Once a week you had that.
How strict were they, and how much trouble would you take preparing a uniform?
Well, very much. But, and they always had to be laid out a certain way.
What? Do you remember now what it was?
How they were laid out? Well, they always had to be laid... Every bit of your kit, I didn't mention this before, when you're issued with your kit, had to be stamped with your name. And you had to lay out your kit on the bed, folded in such a way that your name was visible in every part of your kit. Socks, underwear, uniform, hat, spare hat, everything. And then there was what were called the captain's rounds, to make sure that you had the chalet clean and tidy and kept in the proper manner. And stand to attention outside while he come his rounds, normally on a Friday. And that was it. The weekends, Saturday was a sort of free Saturday, and Sunday was free day. You had divisions on Sunday. Everybody had to attend divisions. And then everyone attended their usual church.